He was silent a while, and stood placidly gazing off into space with his little mouth slightly open. Then he read a little more in the letter. "You can imagine, Father," said he, lifting his head to the bald pate, "that an occurrence like this makes a more or less stimulating change for me in the monotony of this settled place, where a man already settled by nature is in danger of falling asleep. What I usually get down here, either already sentenced or for temporary custody before the scales of justice have finally settled and their case has not yet been tried, are all sorts of tomb robbers, bush rangers, purse snatchers, and none of them help me to keep awake. A love crime is an exciting exception, for there can hardly be any doubt, so far as I know, people of the most diverse way of thinking agree, that this is the most curious, exciting, and mysterious tract of all our human existence. Who has not had his surprising, thought-provoking experience in the realm of Hathor? Have I ever told you about my first love, which was at the same time my second?" "Never, Captain," said the chaplain. "The first and the second, too? I wonder how that could have come about." "Or the second, yet after all the first," responded the commandant. "As you like to put it. Again or forever, who knows which is the right word, and it does not matter either." My Sakme stood there, his expression relaxed, not to say sleepy, his arms folded, the roll tucked under one of them, his head on one side, the heavy brows somewhat lifted under the brown bullet eyes. His rounded lips moved with measured gravity, and he began to narrate, there before Joseph and his guards, before the priest of Wepwawet, and the number of soldiers who had gathered round. "I was 12 years old, a pupil of the House of Instruction in the riding school of the Royal Stables. I was rather short and plump, just as I am today. That is my stature and my state in my life before and after death. But my heart and mind were open, so one day I saw a maiden who was bringing her brother, a fellow pupil of mine, his midday bread and beer, for his mother was ill. His name was Imesib, son of Amenmose, an official. But his sister, who brought him his rations, 3 pieces of bread and 2 jugs of beer, he called Beti, from which I gathered that her name was Nechbet, which proved correct when I inquired of Imesib. For it interested me because she herself interested me, and I could not keep my eyes off her so long as she was there. Not off her braids, nor off her narrow eyes, nor her mouth like a bow, and especially not off her arms, which were bare and of that slender fullness that is so lovely. She made the greatest impression on me, but I did not know all day what the impression was. I found that out only at night, when I lay in the dormitory among my comrades, my clothes and sandals beside me, and under my head, to serve as pillow, according to the regulation, my bag of writing tools and books. For we were not allowed to forget our books even in sleep. The contact with them was to keep them always in mind. But yet I did forget them, for my dreams had a way of shaping themselves quite independently of the books under my head. I dreamed explicitly and vividly that I was betrothed to Nechbet, the daughter of Amenmose. Our fathers and mothers had come to an agreement, and she was soon to become my housewife and sister bride, so that her arm would lie upon mine. I rejoiced beyond all measure, as I had never rejoiced in all my life before. My entrails rose up in joy on account of that contract, which was sealed by our parents, bringing our noses close together. A most lovely feeling. But this dream was so lively, so natural, that it lagged not at all behind reality. And strangely enough, even after I had wakened and washed myself, it beguiled me into believing it. It has never happened to me before or since that a dream has been so vivid as to hold me in its power in my waking hours, so that I went on believing it. Well, on into the morning, I was still fondly and firmly convinced that I was betrothed to the maiden Betty. And only slowly, as I sat in the writing-room and the master thumped me on the back to liven me up, did my inward exultation subside. The bridge over into sobriety was formed by the reflection that the contract and the approaching of our noses had indeed been only a dream, but that nothing stood in the way of its immediate realization, that I only needed to have my parents come to an agreement with Betty's parents on our behalf. For quite a while it seemed to me that after such a dream, my expectation of its fulfillment was only natural, and nobody could be surprised at it. But gradually I arrived at the chilling and sobering thought that the realization of the dream which had seemed so real was only idle nonsense, and as things stood, frankly impossible. For, of course, I was nothing but a schoolboy, still beaten as they beat papyrus, only just at the beginning of my career as scribe and officer, and short and fat into the bargain, according to my constitution, before and after death. And my betrothal to Nekbet, who was probably 3 years older than I, and might any day marry a man far above me in station and dignity, was revealed to me, with the fading of my dream happiness, as a thing of sheer absurdity. So, the official continued imperturbably, I gave up an idea which would never have occurred to me save for that vivid and beautiful dream, and I went on with my studies in the House of Instruction of the Royal Stables, frequently admonished by thumps on my back. 20 years later, when I had long ago become a teacher scribe to the victorious army, I was sent with 3 associates on a journey to Syria, in the wretched chair, to muster and levy a tribute of horses, which were to be sent down in freight boats to Pharaoh's stables. So I traveled from the port of Khadati to the defeated Sekhmen, and to a town which, if I recall rightly, is called Per Sheyan, where we had a garrison, whose colonel gave a party to the people of the countryside and the remount scribes. An evening company with wine and flowers in a house of most beautiful doors. There were Egyptians there, and city notables, men and women. I saw a maiden, a connection of this Egyptian house on the female side, for her mother was a sister of its mistress, and she had come hither on a visit with male and female servants from far away in Upper Egypt, where her parents lived, near the first cataract. Her father was a very rich trader from Suenet, who bought up the wares of the wretched Kasi, ivory, ebony, and leopard skins for the Egyptian market. Now, when I saw this girl, the daughter of the ivory dealer, in all her youth, there happened to me for the second time in my life what had first happened so many years ago in the House of Instruction. I could not keep my eyes off her. She made an exceptional impression on my mind, and brought back in amazing likeness the joyous taste of that long-vanished betrothal dream, so that my entrails rose up for joy at sight of her just as before. But I was shy before her, although a soldier should not be shy, and for some time I shrank from finding out her name and who she was. But when I did so, I learned that she was the daughter of Nekbet, the daughter of Amenmose, who, quite shortly after I had seen her in my dream and been betrothed to her, had become the wife of the ivory merchant of Suenet. But the maid, Nofrure, so she was called, was not like her mother in her features or the color of her braided hair or her complexion, being a good deal darker. At most, her charming figure was like Nekbet's. But how many girls have figures like that? Yet the sight of her aroused in me at once the same deep feelings I had felt then and never again, so that one might say I had loved her already in her mother, as I loved the mother again in her. Indeed, I consider it possible, and in a way I expect, that if again, after another 20 years, I should meet by chance and unawares the daughter of Nofrure, my heart would melt to her irresistibly, as once it did to her mother and her grandmother, and it will always and forever be the same love. That is really a remarkable emotional experience, said the chaplain, charitably passing over the extraordinary fact that the captain had chosen to relate the tale at this moment, in however composed and level a tone. But if the daughter of the ivory merchant were to have a daughter, it would be a pity that she was not your child. Then, even though your boyish dream on the pillow of books could never be realized, yet in Nekhbet's reincarnation, or the return of your inclination to her, reality would have come into its own. Not so, replied Maisakme, shaking his head. Such a rich and beautiful maiden and a remount clerk, short and stout by nature and predestination, how could they go together? Most likely she has married a district baron, or else somebody who stands under the soles of the pharaoh, a steward of the treasure house with the gold of favor round his neck. And you must realize that you stand in a fatherly relation, as it were, to a girl whose mother you once loved, so that the idea of marriage is not quite the thing. Besides, such thoughts as you suggest were shoved into the background with me by what you call the remarkable nature of the situation. That prevented me from taking a decision which would end in the grandchild of my first love becoming my own child. Was that anything actually desirable? It would have deprived me of the expectation in which I now live, that some day, without knowing it, I shall meet the daughter of Nofruri, the granddaughter of Nekhbet, and that she too will make on me the same wonderful impression. That is a possibility which leaves me something to hope for in my elder days. Whereas, if not, the course of my recurrent emotional experiences might have been cut off untimely. That may be, the priest agreed hesitantly. But the least you could do would be to put on paper the story of mother and daughter, or rather your story about them, and use the reed to give it a charming form to the grateful enrichment of our literature. In my opinion, you could just write out of your own fancy the third incarnation of that figure and of your love for it, and make it seem as though it had already happened. I had made some beginnings, replied the captain coolly. That is why I can tell the story so glibly, because I have already done some drafts of it. The thing is only that in order to include the meeting with Beti's granddaughter, I have to set the story in the future and make myself out an elderly man, which is a strain, and I shirk it, although by rights a soldier should not shirk. But the principal trouble is that I doubt whether by temperament I am not too steady-going to give to my tale the thrilling character it should have, as, for instance, in the model story of the two brothers. The subject is too dear to me that I should want to take the chance of botching it. He broke off with a guilty air and said, But at the moment, what I am doing is to induct the prisoner. How many beasts of burden, he asked, turning to condescend to Joseph, though with some difficulty on account of his shortness, would it take, do you think, to carry food to 500 stone workers and porters, together with their officers and overseers? 12 oxen and 50 asses, answered Joseph, might be about right. More or less. And how many men would you order to the rope to drag a block of stone 4 ells long by 2 wide and 1 thick 5 miles to the river? Counting the men needed to clear the road, the water-bearers to wet it under the sledges, and men to carry the rollers that need to be put underneath every now and then, said Joseph, I should say at least 100. Why so many? It is a good heavy block, answered Joseph, and if you do not want to put oxen to it, but men, because men are cheaper, you should take enough of them, so that midway one gang can spell the other at the rope. Then you do not have to reckon with deaths due to checked sweat, or some of them straining their inwards, or their wind giving out so that they roll about in agony. That is certainly to be avoided, but you forget that we have not only the choice between oxen and men, but there are all sorts of barbarians and folk of the desert of the Red Land, from Libya, Pont, and Syria, We have all that we can use. He who is here given into your hand, answered Joseph evenly, is himself of such an origin, namely the child of a shepherd king of the upper Retenu, where it is called Canaan, and has only been stolen down here into Egypt.
Why do you tell me that?
It is here in the letter.
And why do you call yourself a child instead of a son?
It sounds like self-indulgence and pampering, not becoming in a convict, even though his crime is not of a dishonorable kind, but lies in the realm of the emotions. You seem to fear that I, because you are originally from the wretched Zehi, would harness you to the heaviest loads until your sweat was checked and you died a dry death.
That is an attempt, as indiscreet as it is clumsy, to think my thoughts. I should be a poor prison governor if I did not know how to size up every man's parts and place him accordingly. Your answers show very plainly that you once oversaw the household of a great man and understand something about business. It seems you would like, if possible, to avoid having people exhaust themselves, even if they are not children. I mean sons of the black earth. This does not precisely run counter to my own wishes, and shows some knowledge of economic thought. I will use you as overseer over a gang of convicts in the quarry, or perhaps in the inside service and the office, for of course you can reckon faster than the others how many measures of wheat can be put into a storeroom of this and this size, or how much spelt should be brewed to make so and so much beer, or baked to make so much bread, and can turn one value into another, and things like that. It would be really a good thing, he added in explanation to the opener of Wepwawet's mouth, for me to have some such assistance, so that I need not take everything on myself, and could have more leisure for my efforts to put on paper, in a good and even engrossing style, my tale of the three love affairs, which were one and the same.